The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
And we are back. The second hour has arrived, and an update from Omaha, Texas has jumped out in front of Tennessee, 7-4 through four. And John Talty joining us in a few minutes from AL.com. We'll get his take on all of these issues. Let's get back to the calls here. Ed is in South Carolina. Hello, Ed.
Hey, Paul. How you doing, man?
We're doing well. Thank you.
Hey, I agree with you that the NCAA is about done, all right? But, well, there has to be some kind of a governing body.
Well, theoretically, there should be, but I can't assume there really is what right now. I mean, to me, the NCAA just seems like a paper tiger organization that collects billions of dollars and does very little in return.
Yeah, but well, there has to be some kind of people set the rules.
Don't forget every conference could legislate its own. But you can figure that out. That's not impossible to come up with. I mean, the two of us could go out and hire a more competent enforcement staff at a local Walmart than the NCAA currently has.
Oh, absolutely, and let's give Walmart down the road. You know, but I agree with you. But there's got to be some kind of a governing something. Each conference can have different rules. I mean,
More than likely there will be a governing body, Ed, if the NCAA ever breaks up.
Okay, well, I just wanted to get your thoughts about that, but I mean, everybody's got.
Well, yeah, I mean, there has to be some enforcement of college athletics. I agree. Shannon is up next. Hello, Shannon. Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. Good to speak with you.
Thank you.
Hey, Paul, here's my question. You know, when the name, image, and likeness first came out, I wasn't a big fan of it, but I've basically come to the same opinion that I hear you say, is it's coming. There's nothing we need to stop it. And the argument that, well, the colleges are, you know, giving them an education and a college degree, the truth is in our workforce today, the college degree is not worth what it used to be. You know, skilled labor and things of that nature are much more valuable, I think, nowadays. But here's my question. Is there going to be any type of governance on how schools can use the NIL during recruiting? For example, can they say to a kid, hey, if you come here, we can get you this deal or that deal versus if you go to another school? Because my only concern is going to turn into a bidding war, you know.
I agree with you, but let me ask you a question. Who is going to enforce it? I don't mean to say the same thing over and over again, but the NCAA right now is so backlogged on major cases. I mean, they dealt with Creighton today. They still haven't dealt with a number of the big ticket items, and you know who they are. And so, sure. if something flares up, let's say Team A accuses Team B. I mean, unless the school throws itself on the mercy of the court, and even if they do that, it probably still will take years to adjudicate.
I think the gentleman had a very good point earlier about a hometown kid, hometown car dealership, for example. But then you've got the situation where, say, a school out of state says, well, if you come here, we can probably promise you this type of NIL deal. And that kind of thing does concern me, just the bidding war that could erupt for players. I'm sure there's that kind of exists now under the table, so to speak, but. You know,
I think all of these are very good concerns, and I don't think it's going to be a pretty picture. And I do believe that the smart schools have already probably figured out how to attack it. And it's not going to be long. I mean, we're already seeing some signs of what's going to happen here in a couple of weeks.
Well, they've already announced it at Georgia. A couple of the players that have the track star and a kid that just signed at Georgia. The word is out there. There's already an NIL deal from a local
exactly
company
exactly
in place for them. And these kids haven't even seen the field yet.
No. There's good and bad with everything. But in this case, we all wanted this, or most of us wanted it. But I don't know how it's going to be managed. And I know that everyone thinks they have control of it, but once it starts, it is going to be very difficult to contain. Hey, thank you very much. Diane is calling next. Hello, Diane. Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, I just want to say this. You know, my nephew is little Michael, my little buddy.
Oh, sure.
Little Michael.
Absolutely.
And he followed Kiffin, you know, to Ole Miss.
Right.
And I'm really proud of him. But the reason I'm calling you is to say what a great person you are and how great that you do what you do. And I'm just, that's all I wanted to say.
Well, Diane, thank you for calling and updating us. And we appreciate your...
And you know, I'm Vestavia Homewood in Hoover.
Well.
You know, I'm like on the pie.
Yeah, of course. So listen, I hope to.
Yes, I am.
I hope to see you soon, Diane. Thanks for calling. I'm about to. I was in Birmingham the other day, and I'll be back shortly, and hopefully we can run into each other. Great to see you. But the previous caller was right, and there are countless schools who've already gotten the jump on this. If you're just trying to figure this thing out, you are 1,000 miles. Behind. Dustin is in Columbia, Missouri, and you're on the air. Hello, Dustin.
Hello.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hey, how you doing? Big fan.
Thank you.
First of all, appreciate you. I was just basically wondering your general impressions on, I'm a Mizzou fan, and I was basically wondering your impressions on first year, even though the season went less than desirable in a lot of different directions. It's hard to judge a lot of things, I think, by last season, given the COVID situation. But our new head coach, Eli Drinkwitz, I feel like he's a very driven coach, got an edge to him, and I was just basically wondering what you thought about his first year with the program and the new hire at defensive coordinator.
Well, Dustin, I'm glad you asked. I'm a huge fan of Coach Drink, and I frankly think he's got a very good staff. But I think of all the people that he's hired, Steve Wilks as the defensive coordinator is his best hire. And I've gotten to know Steve a little bit. I was with him not too long ago, and he's just a phenomenal individual. His past history is extraordinary, I think, especially from it will help him in a recruiting standpoint. For those who don't know, he was a defensive coordinator when the Panthers made it to the Super Bowl, and he was a head coach for Arizona in the NFL. And I think he's a strong recruiter. I think he could. He could help that program in a lot of ways. There's I know another Curtis Looper's on that staff. Somebody I've gotten to know over the years. There are a lot of other really good coaches. So I think this year you'll start to see some of the rewards. Now I know there was a big win or two last year, LSU, a couple of other games. But I think this year it's going to be significant. I'm not suggesting they're going to end up playing for the SEC, but I think they're going to have a really good year.
I think so too, and unfortunately, I get the feeling that this coach's first among possibly a few great stops in his future.
Yeah, I do not want. I would never wish this on anyone, but I think the big challenge will be to contain him there. I agree. I've heard NFL people have looked at him from a distance. Other colleges will. I have no idea what's going to happen in the future, but he will be a name to keep your eye on. I don't think there's any question about that. Greg is in Iowa. You're on the air. Hello, Greg. Greg, good afternoon. Greg obviously did not answer the bell. How about Mo up next? Hello, Mo. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
How are you today, Paul?
We are doing great. Thank you.
So my question is, due to high tax states, California, Illinois, New York State, when this NIL is passed and these contracts come out, how many recruits are going to pay attention to what their tax rate is in California, New York State, Illinois, and won't that drive them to southern states or states that don't have state income taxes and that sort of thing. How do you think that that is going to play in recruiting? I think if they have a financial advisor or someone close to them that's enlightening them, wouldn't that direct them away from a high tax state and into, I mean, you know, typically southern states are not highly taxed. So wouldn't that just benefit the SEC even more?
Well, especially I think Florida doesn't have state income tax. So it
right.
could.
Maybe it's Tennessee.
Okay, you're right. Should know that. So it could. I mean, first of all, you know, I think you have to take a long view of if you're a high school senior about to become a college freshman, how much money is your upside and will that state
right,
and will
now,
that
now,
and will that tax be a big factor?
But we're talking about 18-year-old kids who
right.
think they're all going to go to the NFL.
Sure.
So they all think that they're going to be the top dog on the team. So I was just kind of curious what you thought that the tax implications about what these kids are going to have to be paying, because we don't have a value put on NIL just yet, or what these contracts are going to become. Now, we all know they're going to blow up in
yeah,
the future.
Mo, I just have a hard time believing at that age you're going to let a state income tax affect where you go to school. Over 4 or 5 years, it could be a big number. But if you think you're going to be an NFL star, I think you'll probably. But it's fair. And, you know, there are going to be a lot of things in young people's heads. And, you know, by the way, California is already at a disadvantage. I mean, players are we were talking to a player from who was it that we were talking to a couple of months ago from Ole Miss, who left California. Other players have left Georgia play. I mean, obviously, the
sure.
quarterback.
I mean, their state income tax is, what, 15.5%?
Yeah,
got to play into.
First of all, why would you live in California if you didn't have to?
Well, I live in the great state of Alabama, and California's the last on my list to go to.
Well, but, yeah.
I get it.
Hey, thank you for the call. I hear you loud and clear. I lived in Alabama a long time. Have never lived in California. We are coming back. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And we welcome you back. So many issues going on in college athletics right now, from the CFP conversation today and at DFW, the NIL, and of course the Alston case yesterday in the Supreme Court. John Talty joining us from AL.com. Always great to have one of the most influential voices in the land on college sports. John, thank you for joining us. Where do we begin with such a busy day? Let's start with today with the CFP kicking this can down the road and maybe even throwing up some warning shots about whether they can get this thing done, with several officials talking about, you know, these contracts are very difficult to unwind. Good afternoon. Where are we with the CFP, and how quickly can we expand this thing and make it palatable?
Yeah, good afternoon, Paul. You're right. It's been a very busy, you know, last 48 hours or so for college athletics. I think with the college football playoff discussion, what you saw today was, you know, A, them continuing to kind of move on down the path. You didn't see any kind of real hurdles thrown up today. Essentially, we're all still moving toward that 12-team playoff, which, you know, came out, I guess, initially a couple weeks ago. I think there's a couple different ways to interpret what they were saying. You know, I think for me, being kind of a sports business-minded person, what comes to mind for me is almost some public posturing to really create a little bit of leverage. I mean, ultimately, one of the biggest factors here, and I know sometimes this is awkward talking about it on your show, but it's your employer and other, you know, kind of these broadcast network, TV network deals, and that's ESPN primarily for the college football playoff. You know, they're getting a lot of money right now, but if they go from four teams to 12 teams, everybody knows that's going to lead to a dramatic increase in terms of the money that's going to be involved. And so I think there's a little bit of posturing right now from some of the leaders in terms of, okay, you know, like there's a lot of talk early about 2023. They're saying, hey, our deal goes until 2026. So, you know, we're not going to introduce this thing unless it's really worth our while. And so I think you're going to see some back and forth in that side of things, just in terms of, you know, can we reach an amount of money that makes sense for everybody? And of course, I think they still have issues to work out in terms of, you know, can they get these other bowls on board that have, you know, historically have been challenging to deal with, you know, especially one out west, because I think one of the biggest things that's come up so far is that, you know, people would love to see all of those quarterfinals on campus, and, you know, it's going to take people like the Rose Bowl organizers to get on board, and that's going to take some time as well. So I think it's partly buying a little bit of time, tempering expectations, but I also think it's certainly a little leverage posturing as well.
John, I understand all that, but if it comes out here in 4 or 5 months that they can't figure this thing out, and we're not going to see this until 26. I mean, how big of a blow is that going to be to this enthusiasm right now that is permeating the air throughout college football?
Yeah, I think it absolutely would be a blow. I think it would be a blow for especially, you know, I feel like one of the first people I saw come out be excited about this was, you know, Gus Malzahn down at Central Florida. And I guarantee you, you know, at places like Central Florida, they're going to use this in recruiting. And right now, if you're recruiting a player, you can say, hey, you know, right now we think it's going to be 2023. You know, we'll have as good of a shot as ever. It's going to be 12 teams. Like, finally, the little guys are going to get a chance to be in the playoff. That gets pushed out to 2026. And that, I mean, most likely this recruiting class might not even see it unless they redshirt. So I think it would be a real damper for, you know, different programs trying to capitalize on this excitement and use it to try to build up their program. I think that certainly some of the traditionalists would probably be excited, buy them some more time to figure it out, buy them some more time to dominate, you know, the SEC, Big Ten, ACC, the ones who have benefited the most from the current setup. You know, they'd probably continue to, you know, do well through 2026. But I certainly think it could hurt, you know, the excitement. And I think one of the big fears, Paul, which I think is pushing a lot of this, is that, you know, college football is too much of a regional sport. And if this does drag out and it seems like it's kind of this, you know, battle between the powers that be, I think it kind of even further lends into that that perception that this is, you know, more of a regional than a national sport.
John, another subject that you don't hear about, I mean, it was like 10 years ago when it was raging through the country, although we've seen some leagues like the Big 12 expand or flip teams back and forth in the interim. But do you think this conversation will bring expansion back in the future, or do you think that is a long gone conversation in college athletics right now?
I think it's a great question, Paul. I think that, again, I think you could look at it from a couple different ways. I would say my first gut reaction is that, you know, I would wonder what is there to be gained. You know, in theory, if this 12-team playoff is trying to open up access to more people and more conferences and things like that, you would think there's less to be gained by being in certain conferences if it's a little bit more opened up. But I do wonder, and I think we'll get into some of this stuff, you know, more in the future, but there's all these different things happening right now in college athletics. You know, there's all the amateurism talk, there's going to continue to be discussions about the Power Five breaking away to do its own thing. I think you probably remember years ago there were stories of, you know, what happens if the Vanderbilts and Stanfords and Notre Dames of the world decide that, you know, this is becoming too much like professional sports and they decide to break away and do their own thing. So that's what I could maybe see some of that realignment happening again if that if the current NCAA model just is no longer sustainable for people based on the changes that we all see coming. That I could see potentially creating another round of, you know, either getting in a conference that suits what your kind of current mission is going forward, or maybe pulling back a little bit and saying, we don't want to be associated with how things are trending and we're going to do our own thing. I think, again, I think that to this point, that's just been a lot of public posturing too of schools saying, oh, you know, I don't know if that aligns with our values, but, you know, more often than not, the money is what talks and they want to keep making all that money that comes from big time college athletics. But I'd be very interested to see, you know, when some of these deals come up in terms of TV with these conferences, whether that does lead to any changes.
John Talty with us from AL.com. Last fall, I believe, you did a piece on the most influential people in the SEC, you know, mainly administrators, the commissioner, television people. I bring this up because not only are you plugged into who curries influence in the SEC, but, you know, on the broader scope of college athletics. I know that's a long way to get to a really simple question. Why is Mark Emmert still the president of the NCAA?
Well, I think that's a question that a lot of people are wondering. You know, I think the easy answer, and I'm not saying this is the most original answer, I'm sure other people have said it too, but it reminds me a little bit of the NFL situation with Roger Goodell, in which he's essentially the guy who can take all the bullets and, you know, protect the owner's interests and be basically the bad guy publicly so that the owners can kind of do, you know, what they want to do and have them basically just have to present that to the world. I think there is a massive, massive divide in terms of how he is perceived at the AD coach level versus the president and chancellor level. Now, as you and I have, I think, talked about plenty of times on this show, especially last year when all these kind of are they going to play or not play decisions were up in the air, the presidents and chancellors are the ones that have the real power. They're the ones who are deciding essentially, you know, whether games are played, the big changes that happen. It always comes down to them. And you know, with the NCAA, there's a board of governors, and it's not all presidents and chancellors, but those are the most powerful people on that. And those people evidently are okay with Mark Emmert continuing to be kind of the bumbling face of the NCAA. He takes all the arrows, and he can protect what I guess they want him to portray. But I think and I know you talk to a lot of people as well, Paul, but I would say at the AD and coach level, Mark Emmert is very unpopular, and I would say if you polled, you know, the 130 FBS ADs and said, you know, yes or no, do you want to keep Mark Emmert as the NCAA commissioner? And, I mean, it would be without question an overwhelming no. We would not want him to continue. But again, those people make recommendations to their presidents and chancellors and all that, and ultimately, those are the people that really have the power to change something. And even in the face of, I would say, overwhelming criticism of Mark Emmert and the NCAA as a whole, you know, as you know, they just gave him an extension. So clearly somebody thinks he's doing a good job.
Which brings me to another question based off of the Alston ruling. It's easy to predict doom and gloom for the NCAA. I've been doing it for a long time, and yesterday helped move that down the road. But, yeah, do the commissioners, and you're obviously close to Greg Sankey, and you know most of them, if not all of them, Do they really want the NCAA to go away? Because right now they don't. The NCAA is just a cash machine for them on the basketball tournament. They don't really care what Mark Emmert thinks about anything, do they?
Well, I think they do care, and I think that you remember certainly. You know, I would say quite a few conference commissioners, including you know the one overseeing the SEC. Was very upset with how Mark Emmert handled, you know, some of the stuff during COVID. And when they pulled the plug on, I think it was baseball and softball without really consulting people, there was a lot of anger around college athletics that, you know, this guy is not really consulting us the way that he should. I think that he is viewed as kind of, you know, a bumbling guy amongst those people. Now, the thing that I've always come back to, Paul, and I'm sure that's kind of what you're hitting on here, is basically, you know, whenever we see these stories of, you know, the Power Five potentially breaking away, and I've heard them, I know you've heard them from people, you know, high up people in college athletics. It's something that's been discussed. It's been discussed with, you know, United States senators and people like that. But the question is always, is it worth it for them to do that? Because what the NCAA does do a lot of is hosting the track and field championships and all these other different competitions that, you know, we all say are important in terms of the college athletics experience, but don't make money, are not easy to coordinate, and, you know, it's, there's just a lot that goes into that. Do those conferences want to add that, you know, to their plate? That's always going to be something that I'm going to question about whether they want to really take on those responsibilities. And, of course, probably the biggest factor of all is if they, you know, do kind of break off, is this, you know, a committee approach? Is it one person becomes kind of the leader, either a name or de facto status? Because no commissioner, you're the ACC commissioner, the Big Ten commissioner, whatever, you don't want to give up any power. You know, you don't want to just say, yeah, you know, Greg Sankey, you be in charge of the Power Five. Nobody wants that. There's plenty of ego involved here. So that's going to be another massive factor in terms of, you know, whether the NCAA goes away in some regard. Is there someone who takes over kind of control of a new organization or something like that? Because it'll be difficult, I think, to reach consensus there. Once you reach the top, you don't usually want to give that up.
So I hear this from a lot of your constituents. So you're saying it's probably unlikely that Nick Saban is going to be the czar of college football?
Everybody brings it up. And it's, I will tell you this, Paul. I think that, you know, one of the things that, you know, I talk to people all the time about, you know, about Nick, and you know, everybody, I think one of the biggest questions with Coach Saban is, you know, when does he walk away? You know, I think there was plenty of discussion on your show recently about that. Obviously, just signed is an extension that, you know, has him coaching late into his 70s. And I think the thing that most people always wonder is, like, you know, he just loves being part of a team. He's talked about that. And, that, like, it would be so hard for him to do anything else. But I will say, talking to people that know him, I think that being the czar of football type thing, which, again, I don't think it ever happens, but I do think that is one of those kind of roles that would stimulate him and give him something to do beyond just being a football coach. So with all that said, if I am a rival coach in the SEC, I am doing everything I can to create a czar of football role and do everything I can to push him into that role, because otherwise this guy's going to continue to dominate college football.
Yeah, I mean, I think the natural answer, John, as we close it down here, is no, you couldn't give it to him. But everyone outside of Greg Byrne, everyone in college athletics would vote for that. So it may happen sooner than we think. Great to have you on. It's so insightful to hear your voice on all these subjects. We hope to see you soon, John.
Sounds good, Paul. Appreciate you as always.
You got it. John Talty. I mean, I've said this, and I'll continue to say, you know, there are a few brighter minds on college football than him, and few young people that have as much influence with the people that run the programs and the organization. We are coming back with more of your phone calls right around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we are back here on a Tuesday afternoon. Much to discuss in the next 2.5 hours, and Rod is up next in Memphis. Hello, Rod.
Hey, Paul, can you hear me?
I sure can. Thank you.
First of all, I love your show. I got to ask you one question before I get to my main question.
Of course.
That lady from Alabama, was that your mom, or how much did you pay her?
I probably don't have enough to pay her, but I could always go to a bank if she'll keep calling.
I'll tell you what, you're besides spending Hardaway, you're on every barbershop down here.
Well, I was talking to my friends in Memphis today on the radio, and they told me that Larry Penny was about to hire Larry Brown, who just turned 80. I mean, is that possible?
I heard that too. I don't know if the powers that may be will let him, but you know, they love their basketball down here too.
It can't hurt. I mean, Larry Brown has won a few championships in his life, and Penny is still struggling to show his his style as a coach. He was a phenomenal player, but I hope it turns out well.
Oh, I don't know, but I'd like to see that football program. I'm a football fan, SEC fan. I called you once earlier, Paul, last year, and now that we're in the off season, I got a question for you.
Okay.
You know, I'm sitting here. Let me preface it, if I could, real quick. I met a lady, and I'm all into SEC. The only SEC stadium I have not been in is Texas A&M. So I'm like, she's from Indianapolis. So I said, hey, we're going to go to Vanderbilt to a game. We go to Vanderbilt. This has been about 3 or 4 years ago. And I'm like, oh, you're going to be amazed, you know. They're playing Georgia. The stadium was half empty. There was nothing like anything I've seen at an SEC game. Not to offend anybody from Nashville, but they can blast me, not you. You didn't ask the question. But if you had one team that you could replace Vanderbilt in the SEC with, who would it be?
Well, first of all, let me state just for the record.
I knew I'd put you on the spot.
But, hey, by the way, I was once a newspaper columnist, and I would write columns occasionally. that suggested this school should be kicked out of this league. So I've been to a few places in the SEC where I still have to answer. People will come up to me and they say, well, did you really write that? I go, oh, absolutely not. I mean, even though there's not only a record of it, there's a book of my articles that includes some of those articles. I think the school that covets the SEC more than any other school right now is Oklahoma. And every time I say that, I get blowback. But I'm not saying that just to try to irritate anybody. I'm saying it because I truly believe that Oklahoma is a great fit for the SEC. I think a couple of years ago, there was some back channel conversation. I mean, more than a couple of years ago. But I don't know if it will happen. The thing about expansion, you just can't grab one school. You need two to make it equitable, assuming the SEC continues with divisions, which I think they will.
But if you could pick one team, not who's out there, if you could pick one team, Paul, who would it be? I'll tell you mine.
Okay.
I would say Florida State. Wouldn't that be incredible?
Yeah, well, I mean, I would argue this. And, you know, the dynamics have changed. It used to be you would go out and try to bring a region or an audience together. You don't need to do that anymore. The SEC is on television everywhere, and one school is not going to matter. Florida State is a natural fit. I totally agree with you. But you know what I have to say to Florida State? You had your chance. The SEC wanted Florida State in the late 80s and early 90s, and Bobby Bowden turned them down. He didn't want to deal with the SEC. He did not. He flat out turned the SEC down, and he was honest about it. He did not want to have to face Georgia and Florida and Auburn and Alabama. Could he have beaten most of them in his heyday? Yeah, he could have. But he knew it was much easier to get to win a national championship by having a two-game season, and that two-game season used to be, which still is, really, Clemson and Florida. And other than that, Florida State fans don't want to get in the SEC. They don't want it. They can't even compete right now in the ACC. Let's continue. Mitch is up next. You are on the air. Hello, Mitch.
Hey, Uncle Paul. How are you?
We are doing great.
I'm just responding to that person who was calling and saying the states that don't require state taxes, the schools in those states might have a recruiting edge.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken, a student files their state taxes in the state of residence, meaning then unless they have declared themselves a resident of that state, they file their taxes back in the state they come from.
You may be right about that. I will tell you, and we'll shut this argument down, the state income tax is not going to influence someone's decision on where to go to school. They're not making enough money to matter.
No, I agree, because you got to make over $12,000. Before you have to even file a state tax, and I don't see many players making $12,000.
Yeah, you know, Mitch, the first two or three years of my career, I made so little money. I didn't file it, and I had to file. I realized after the fact, and they allowed me
that
to. They allowed me. I really thought I was going to jail when I suddenly discovered, like two years into my career in Alabama, that I hadn't filed state income tax. And I talked to a lawyer. He said, "You don't make enough money that they would never come after you. But here's what I would do." And he helped me find somebody, and I filed an addendum. And I think the state laughed at me when I filed it.
Because anyway, I have one more question.
Sure.
I know you're gonna laugh at it, but what does the NCAA do with all the money they make?
Mitch, good question. The NCAA basically uses that money to pay for Mark Emmert's private plane, his luxury presidential suites at the Ritz-Carlton, and it helped build a Taj Mahal building in Indianapolis a couple of years ago. I hate to run. We're up against a break. I went too long with a couple of interviews here. We are coming back with much, much more.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And we are back, and John is up next. Good afternoon, John. Thanks.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
We're doing well. Thanks a lot for the call.
Good. Hey, I'm just curious. I know everything has a beginning. Was the name, image, and likeness, was the genesis of that when the Northwestern football players, I can't remember who they sued, whether it was university or the NCAA. Was that the beginning of that?
Well, it certainly played a role. I mean, I think really this all began with the Ed O'Bannon case, and when he took that to court, the former UCLA player. But you're right. I think that was about 7 or 8 years ago. That was a very important moment, and I think if this case continues down the road, the Alston case gets regenerated with another case. Now, you could see the unionization. Now, the reason why I believe this is correct, Northwestern was able to attempt to do this, was because it was a private institution.
Okay, so don't break the stadium. But the Northwestern suit, they did win, didn't they?
I believe they did, but I'm vaguely remember. I mean, I do remember the case. I remember Pat Fitzgerald was supporting the players in kind of a cryptic way, but it was a big deal. It definitely. It garnered a lot of attention.
Yeah, I remember that. I'm just curious. I didn't know, because I know everything begins somewhere, so I'm just trying to figure out where this started.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right about that, and yeah, but I think you have to go back. I mean, this has been going on a long time. I think you'd have to say it was the Ed O'Bannon case when he sued them. I mean, he sued them over his ability to profit. I mean, it was a direct link, and the NCAA has been ripe for this for a long time. I mean, they've just simply hung their hat on language that really had nothing to do with the issue at hand. And I think that was why Justice Kavanaugh's line yesterday is going to be repeated. That's the one thing we're going to remember from the Alston case. It's not even the merits of the case, which were really not that important. It was the line that he uttered, the NCAA is not above the law. That was a shattering blow to this organization. We're coming back. A lot more to do in the next 2 hours. We'll talk to a young man you may have heard about from California. He is Jake Olson, and we will talk to him shortly.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.